Persevere, because the Lord always delivers his people. Persevere, keep going, because the Lord always delivers his people. Wasihood was only 7, his sister Baku just 14. It was dark and it was late, and these two children were in bed. But that didn't stop the angry mob who turned up at their home in the middle of the night. They'd come to kill their father, Mutama. In their small rural village in Ethiopia, their family were the only Christians. Mutama refused to participate in the community rituals. He was bold and active in the sharing of his faith in Jesus. And so in August 2013, a mob of angry villagers attacked Mutama. They dragged him outside and began to beat him. Wasihun clung desperately to his father's legs, crying. His siblings could only watch on in horror. "I was shocked when my dad was killed in front of me," said Wasihun. "But God comforted us and told us that he would be a father to each of us." His sister Baku once dreamed of being a singer. "They killed my father because he was a believer. He loved the gospel," she said. "He loved God a lot. After his death, I gave up on life." But now it's 5 years later, it's 2018, and Baku is now 19 years old. Listen to what she said recently in an interview. "Thanks to the support of other Christians, our lives have changed massively. I want to serve this God who has helped me through the desert, through my trials. I would serve God at any cost. I would leave everything for a chance to preach his love. It would be all I preach about." Listen, she's 19 years of age. Her father was killed for following Jesus. But the faith that killed her father is now the same faith that sustains and inspires her. Baku once dreamed of being a singer. Now she dreams of being an evangelist. "God comforts us," she said. "God told us he will be our dad. He will show us his goodness even more in the midst of persecution." It's an amazing response to suffering, isn't it? What incredible resilience. Her little brother Wasihun is now 12. He used to work by collecting firewood with his father. But now he prays that he might continue to concentrate on God and working for his kingdom. Wasihun and Baku haven't given up. They've grown up instead. And they persevere because they know that the Lord always delivers his people. They know this already from their lived experience. It's a powerful testimony, isn't it? They've overcome. They're enduring faithfully. They're still only kids. And yet it's so far removed from our experience, isn't it? Not only this kind of suffering, but that kind of response. In the face of suffering and persecution, they're more determined, more focused on Jesus than before. But it's so far removed from our level of commitment. So far removed from our kind of Christianity. At the first sign of trouble or inconvenience, at the slightest bump, hiccup, cough or sneeze, when things go bad for us, when things don't go according to plan, suddenly there's a heap of reasons for us to stay at home. There's too much going on to come to church. Our health is deteriorating, life is only getting more complicated. We save our money in periods of uncertainty, so we're not as generous in our giving as we could be. We're too tired and too distracted to read the Bible. Easy to plonk in front of the telly with a bottle of plonk. God's not answering my prayers, so why bother praying? We wonder why church isn't doing it for us. We wonder why we're not growing in our faith. So the only thing that grows in our faith now are increasing doubts and unrising uncertainty and inflated anxieties. So all we're left with are doubts and uncertainties and questions. Instead of drawing nearer to God in our suffering, we tend to withdraw from him because we think he's withdrawing from us. Why else would we be suffering, we think? We withdraw from God's people. We withdraw from God's word. But the temptation to give up, to withdraw from God in times of trial, are all schemes designed to destroy your faith and hope. And they all come from the same source. Temptation in Ethiopia looks very different to temptation in Rockhampton. And it feels very different too. but the battle we face as the people of God is exactly the same the whole world over. We have an enemy who actively seeks to destroy us. And I want you to clearly hear this morning, I want you to clearly hear from me this morning that it's normal to feel like you want to give up. It was no different for the Apostle John. John's being persecuted for his faith in Jesus too, exiled to the island of Patmos, sentenced to death for proclaiming there's new life in Jesus. John's lucky to still be alive, boiled in oil, sent to the Mediterranean to fry. But John isn't just at odds with a village, not just at odds with a prevailing culture like we are. John's at odds with the entire Roman Empire. He suffers, but still he patiently endures. He perseveres because the Lord always delivers his people. Say that again with me, will you? Revelation chapter 1, verse 9. The words are on the screen here behind me. I, John, your brother and companion in the suffering and kingdom and patient endurance that are ours in Jesus, was on the island of Patmos because of the word of God and the testimony of Jesus. John shares in our suffering, suffering because of his faith in Jesus. Suffering is ours if we are in Christ. John shares in the kingdom, partners with us in patient endurance. John writes this book, Revelation, for all Christians everywhere. Everything he sees and hears, he writes down for us. So that although we suffer, we might patiently endure, because the Lord always delivers his people. It's always been this way, the whole world over for the people of God. The same story everywhere. Not just for these seven churches in Asia Minor. There's nothing different. Nothing's changed. People will tell you things are getting worse. Christian friends will tell you the end is getting near. But we've always had an enemy actively seeking to destroy us. It's his full-time job to lead you astray. For many people, Christmas is such a great time of year. Not that long ago now, can you believe it? Only 44 more sleeps left till Christmas. Decorations are appearing in the shops. People are doing their Christmas shopping. Lots of love and lots of laughter and lots of family and lots of food and lots of presents. Peace on earth and goodwill to everyone, right? But if Christmas at your place feels a little strained, if celebrations get a little bit intense sometimes, I mean, if breaking a bonbon with your in-laws is symbolic of the arm wrestle over your life's choices, as far back as the one involving marrying their daughter over two decades ago now, then you're probably a little closer to the Christmas spirit than those who keep calling you a Grinch and a humbug. Look there with me, Revelation chapter 12. In his vision, John sees a pregnant woman. And she's about to do what 50% of all pregnant women do, give birth to a son. That's the Christmas story that we all know and love, isn't it? That's the one that's familiar to us. A son will rule over the nations with an iron scepter. It's taken directly from Psalm 2, the promised Son of God ruling over the nations while the people and the kings of the earth oppose him, oppose his rule. But John doesn't now see a man in a red suit. John sees a red dragon instead. And you can see it too, Revelation chapter 12, verse 3. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with seven heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on its head. Its tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky and flung them to the earth. The dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth so that it might devour her child the moment he was born. Star of wonder, star of night, star of royal beauty bright. Well, the dragon's just wiped out most of those stars, and he's about to devour the baby for his Christmas lunch. Why don't we ever see Revelation chapter 12, verse 4 on the Christmas cards you get in the mail? Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright. It's not exactly the picture that John's painting here, is it? So what's going on? Well, what's going on is the stuff that we never see. the stuff that we fail to pay attention to, because we've been fooled into believing what our society's telling us. We've been fooled into believing our own education, that all we can see is all that exists, that there's nothing beyond our own personal experience, trapped in our own immanence, with no transcendent escape. But listen carefully, friends. The Red Dragon isn't just the name of a Chinese restaurant in Burpengary. We're told in verse 9 that the Red Dragon is Satan, the devil, whose sole purpose is to lead God's people astray. There's a war going on in heaven. Satan got booted out. And God's people now have an active enemy, an enemy who's intent on your destruction. Satan had it in for Jesus before he was even born. You remember the Christmas story, don't you? It was Herod who ordered the infanticide of the newborn king. But Jesus was delivered by God because God always delivers his people. And that's really the point that John's making here. Persevere, keep going, because God always delivers his people. So when the devil couldn't devour Jesus, he turned and went after the woman. The woman is Mary. The woman is the early persecuted Jewish Christians. But God delivered her. God delivered them from the Red Dragon too. So when that didn't work out for him, the accuser came after every single one of us. Look there, chapter 12, verse 17. Then the dragon was enraged at the woman and went off to wage war against the rest of her offspring, those who keep God's commands and hold fast to their testimony about Jesus. Her offspring? The children of God? That's us, right? People holding fast to Jesus. That's you, isn't it? So then here is where we are right now. John's marooned on Patmos. Wasihun witnessed the brutal murder of his father. And our faith is paralyzed by apathy and anxiety. The devil has declared war against God's people. The devil active in combat against you. Even though it doesn't look like it. Even though it feels relatively peaceful and calm at your place, it might be Armistice Day, but we're at war. And he schemes to destroy you, chapter 12, verse 10. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters, who accuses them before our God day and night, has been hurled down. Hurled down to us. He accuses. He deceives. He is filled with fury. But the Red Dragon is a defeated enemy. So friends, persevere, because the Lord always delivers his people. That's how we overcome the devil. That's how we're not led into temptation. That's how he delivers us from the evil one. That's how Jesus taught us to pray, isn't it? Persevering because God always delivers his people. Chapter 12, verse 11. They triumphed over him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. Baku watched her father die. And now she wants to preach that same gospel. She doesn't love her life so much to save it. She's not into self-preservation and self-protection. She's not shrinking back. Even if deliverance isn't from persecution, she perseveres because the Lord always delivers his people. Do you remember what she said? He will show us his goodness even more in the midst of persecution. And there's no exceptions here. It's happening to God's people the whole world over. If you think the enemy's going to take it easy on you, if you think he's leaving you alone, if you think you're going to live the good life now, if you think you're untouchable, if you think that he doesn't even exist, then the enemy's got you right where he wants you. And I want you to know it's normal to feel like giving up. But listen up. Hear the warning again. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 and 9, the words on the screen here. Be alert and of sober mind, your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that the family of believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of sufferings. You're not unique. You're no exception. We're all in this together. Partners in the suffering that is ours in Jesus. You see, this is what our enemy does with us. His entire MO, his mode of operation, are accusations and deceptions. These are the only tricks left in his trick bag. The only weapons he's got left in his arsenal. All of them used with the intent to lead you astray. He prowls around to see who's going to be next. Don't let it be you. So you think you're fighting the elements. You think you're braving the conditions, against the odds, dealing with what's in front of you. But the opposition that we face is so much more than that, so much more than the things that we see in front of us. Look there, chapter 6, verse 11. Ephesians 6, 11. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Whenever one of our kids has a bad dream, predictably about an hour after we've put them into bed, they'll come out and tell us all about it, all the weird and scary things that they've seen. And we listen to them patiently. We remind them of the reality that dreams aren't real. We tell them that we love them. And we send them back to bed. As John recalls these two beasts in chapter 13, you might think that John just needs to go back to bed. But John isn't having a bad dream. Remember, this is a vision of what must soon take place. Now, we don't have time to cover everything this morning. It's really important, too, that we don't get lost in the details. But what I want us to see is the main point that John's making. And the main point is this. Our enemy is a deceiver. So John sees two beasts. Between them, they cover the entire world. One comes out of the sea, chapter 13, verse 1. The other out of the earth, chapter 13, verse 11. And they both exercise authority given to them by Satan, the red dragon. Hopefully you can spot the forgery already, but let's keep going in case you haven't seen it just yet. One of the beasts has a fatal wound that now appears to be healed, while the other beast performs signs and wonders so that people might worship the one who's been wounded. And worship him they do, chapter 13, verse 4. People worship the dragon because he had given authority to the beast. And they also worship the beast and asked, who is like the beast? Who can wage war against it? The people, they sing his praises. Who is like him? Who can defeat him? They worship the dragon and the wounded beast, while the other beast now marks out people who belong to them. Sounding a bit familiar? Chapter 13, verse 16. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hands or on their foreheads so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the person who has insight calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. That number is 666. You've all heard about the mark of the beast, haven't you? And the number of the devil is 666. But the bit that calls for wisdom will soon tell you that the number really isn't all that important. Ancient manuscripts say it's 616, not 666. So whether the number is 666 on your license plate or it's 666 on the CCV number on your credit card, there's a bigger picture being painted here than just colour by numbers. See, the only thing the devil creates is a knockoff, a cheap replica, a cheap imitation at that. The devil is all left-brained. He's got no creativity in him at all. God's the creator. The red dragon, the beast that was fatally wounded, the beast that does signs and wonders, they are the unholy trinity. His only trick, remember, is deception. And they're set up in direct opposition to God, set up in direct opposition to God's people. So all of us have got an option, a decision here to make, haven't we? Are we going to follow the Lamb in chapter 14, verse 4? Or are we going to worship the beast in chapter 14, verse 9? Are we going to stand with him on Mount Zion, the Lamb, in chapter 14, verse 1? Or are we going to fall with Babylon in chapter 14, verse 8? See, Revelation really is a tale of two cities, isn't it? Are we going to bear the Father's name on our foreheads, chapter 14, verse 1? Or are we going to wear the mark of the beast, chapter 14, verse 9? Will we sing the new song in chapter 14, verse 3? Or will we drink the cup of God's wrath in chapter 14, verse 10? Either way, what's called for here is patient endurance. And so John even calls for it twice. Chapter 13, verse 11, chapter 14, verse 12. So even if the details are a little bit confusing for us in a passage like this, the main point of the passage is clear, isn't it? Persevere because the Lord always delivers his people. The evil one's not going to let up on us. We're still at war. Chapter 13, verse 7. The beast was given power to wage war against God's holy people and to conquer them. You see, the enemy lives to lead you astray. He wages war against you. He wants you to quit. He wants you to give in. But don't you let him. It's normal to feel this way. Normal to have doubts and ask lots of questions. You see, he wants you to stay at home from church. He wants you to be too busy to meet with other Christians. He wants you to sleep in or go to something else on a Sunday morning. He wants you to feel too tired from a big and busy week. He wants you to withdraw from God. He wants you to withdraw from God's people. But don't you see, we're of those who've already overcome. Numbered, but with those who don't shrink back. Because the Lord has already delivered us. Chapter 12, verse 11. They triumphed over him by the blood of the Lamb, and by the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. Living for Jesus calls for patient endurance. And so that you might patiently endure, let's listen again to the word of their testimony.